Okay, so the call tonight is, are we men worthy to follow? Okay, so are you a man that other men would follow? That's the question I want us to process tonight that I felt like when I was in 1 Peter 5 and I've been here for so long, this is the thing that comes on my mind. So we're going to just jump right into the word in chapter 5 and let's see, I'm going to read the whole thing together and then we'll break it down just a few verses that we've got for tonight. So starting in verse 1, so I exhort the elders among you, as a fellow elder and a witness of the sufferings of Christ, as well as a partaker in the glory that is going to be revealed, shepherd the flock of God that is among you, exercising oversight, not under compulsion, but willingly as God would have you, not for shameful gain, but eagerly, not domineering over those in your charge, but being examples to the flock. And when the chief shepherd appears, you will receive the unfading crown of glory. Likewise, you who are younger, be subject to the elders. Clothe yourselves, all of you, with humility towards one another, for God opposes the proud but gives grace to the humble. Humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, so that at the proper time he may exalt you, casting all your anxieties on him, because he cares for you. Be sober-minded, be watchful. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion, seeking someone to devour. Resist him, firm in your faith, knowing that the same kinds of suffering are being experienced by your brotherhood throughout the world. And after you've suffered a little while, the God of all grace, who's called you to his eternal glory in Christ, will himself restore, confirm, strengthen, and establish you. To him be the dominion forever and ever. Amen. I love this word, guys. So here's the question I've got for us. Are you a man who others would follow? You see, the kind of man that this is talking about, the kind of man that others would follow, is not shaped by power, strength, or status, right? It is not shaped by power, strength, or status, but yet the posture of his heart, okay? And that's what Peter is setting us up for tonight. There's three things I want to look at tonight that set up the posture of a man's heart that would be a man that we would follow. And it starts in verse 2 where he says, shepherd the flock of God that is among you. Shepherd the flock of God that is among you. Okay, so let's play a little interaction game here. So if you work at a company and you have direct reports, raise your hand. Okay, keep your hands up. Keep your hands up. Okay, let's see. If you have kids, raise your hand. All right. If you are married, have been married, or want to be married, raise your hand. At this point, everybody should have their hand raised. Okay? So here's my point. Put them down. You're good. All right. So here's the point, right? This is not a question of if a man is being called to leadership. You are all called to lead someone. We have influence in someone's life. You are called. The question really is, what posture are you leading from? Now, so what we're saying is, to be that man that others would follow, you didn't hear me say, be the man that people would obey. Okay? There's a difference. I think sometimes we get hung up. We think about to be a leader means somebody needs to obey me. Right? There is a difference between follow and obey. Right? We are called, I'm called, to obey positions of authority that are over me. Right? We all have some authority that's over us, and God calls us to obey those positions. But I get to choose who I follow. I get to choose who I emulate. I get to choose who I look up to lead me through difficult situations, right? Those are things we get to choose. So there's a difference between follow and obey, all right? Now, I hate to admit this, but oftentimes in our lives, in our worlds, right, I think you guys can agree with me on this, is that the positions of leadership that we have to obey that are over us are seldomly the same men that we would follow. Can y'all agree with that? Like, we know that. But we can also go, one of the great blessings is when there is an authority over your life that has, like, think of like whether you're in the military, whether it's your boss at work, whatever it is, that he has authority, right? He's a leader over you that you are charged under that institution or organization to follow. But isn't it awesome when that person also is the same one that you have such high respect for that you'd be willing to follow them into a life and death situation or out of a life and death situation? So my question to you is, are you that man? Are you a man that others would go, I would follow that guy to hell and back? Like, I would trust that man to get me out of a difficult situation. Or are we the guy going, just obey me? Please tell me you don't go home and you go, woman, obey me. That doesn't work. I promise. I haven't tried, okay? But I think sometimes our words, we can set that up and put it in motion. And then you wonder why it's a cold shower night. Like, if you demanded obeying, like, well, so that's my point, is are you the man that somebody will choose to follow, that somebody wants to follow, right? So that's what we're going to explore. So Peter gives us three postures of a heart that shape this man, right? Because remember, it doesn't come from power and position. This comes from a heart posture. All right, so number one, humility. Humility. In verse 6, what does it say? It says, humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, so that at the proper time, he may exalt you. Humble yourselves. The humble heart bows, right? But I'm worried that a lot of times we resist humility because we think it's connected to weakness, right? We struggle with it because we're like, no, if I give up control of some kind, I'm actually weak. Like, that we wrestle with that. But I got to be honest, guys. You know what this story, this verse reminds me of? Keep this verse up for a while. This verse, humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God. You know what it reminds me of? The garden. The garden. Now, if you're new to us and you're like, man, Danny, I just opened this book and I'm really wrestling with all these things, let me explain the garden. This is the moment, Garden of Gethsemane, when Jesus is a day away from being crucified. Like, he's hours away from being betrayed. He's hours away from being flogged. And carrying a cross and being crucified on the cross. And what is he doing? He turns to his disciples and he says, guys, my closest friends, please kneel with me, bow with me, and get in prayer with me. Pray that your flesh would not be weak. Pray for what is about to happen. Just pray with me. Stand guard. Pray with me. And so Jesus begins to pray, and he's wrestling with God, and he's praying so hard to his Father that he's literally sweating blood, okay? And this is the moment when he says, famously, Lord, take this cup from me. Father, take this cup from me. But yet not my will, but yours be done. Humble yourselves to the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you. Because what we see in the rest of Matthew 26, when we see where this goes, only in that moment when Jesus humbled himself to his Father's mighty hand, was he able to then be exalted. How? Yes. He had to die on a cross. That was God's will. That was God's plan that he put in motion. But then God exalted him. Why? Because he was resurrected. Praise God, he rose, because then the entire world has opportunity to know God and have a relationship. So Jesus humbled himself to his Father's hand and was exalted, and the whole world would come saved. So this is my question back to you, is when we humble ourselves to the mighty hand of God, what in your world will change? How would you be exalted? What will happen in your home and in your career when you humble yourselves like Christ did? You see the correlation there? So this is not, humility is not weakness. There is nobody stronger in the world than Jesus, capable of dying on a cross for you. When we deserve it, he didn't, right? That's power. That's strength under control. So humility is not weakness, right? Now, it takes absolute strength then for you to give total control of your life over to God, right? It's a massive amount of strength. But then when we give that over, that's when we can be exalted. And I think about when for Peter, like, he's reminding us in this. You got to remember, Peter is living all this out. He remembers that there was a moment in Matthew 16 when he is hearing Jesus is talking to his disciples, and he's letting them know, hey, guys, FYI, this is what is about to happen. Right, I'm about to be betrayed. I'm about to be turned over by the chief priests, and I'm going to be crucified. Right, and they're going to put me to death, and then I'm going to rise in 3 days. And what does Peter do? Peter's like, "That's not good for me, God. Like, that's not good for me, Lord. It's not how this is going to go. I refuse to let that happen. I won't let that happen to you. I'm going to stop it from happening." And what does Jesus say to him? "Get behind me, Satan." Right, like, he rebukes him. So you recognize Peter was not humbling himself to God's plan. He was like, this is my plan. This is how we're going to work this out. This is how this is going to go. So he's remembering this. He's drawing on this when he says, humble yourselves. Don't do as I did. I'm much wiser and older now. I figured it out. Because then when I finally humbled myself, boom, that's when I was given purpose. Right? That's what he's saying to us. Okay. So The humble man then listens before he speaks. Okay? He listens before he speaks. The humble man repents and he seeks to restore and reconcile relationships. Guys, I'm going to be honest. You get in an argument with your wife, be the first one to seek peace. I don't care who was right. A humble man seeks to make peace even when they were the one wronged. That's hard, I know. But a humble man will do that. You want peace in your home? Be the one to establish it. Okay? And then you seek to raise up. A humble man will seek to raise somebody else up, not be praised up himself. Okay? All right, let's keep moving. So now that the nature of humility has been established in us, when you finally recognize, okay, God is God, I am not, I'm going to humble myself to him, that's when you start to be positioned for dependence. Dependence. Because now you've realized that you have a great deal of burdens on your shoulders. You recognize, I have a home, I have a job, I have a wife, I have a family, I have friends, I have colleagues, I have all these things. I've got all these things I've got to balance. You start realizing, like, man, there's a lot here I got to manage. Okay? The only way through this is when you have a dependency on God. And that's where Peter then says in verse 7, it says, cast all your anxieties on him because he cares for you. Cast all your anxieties on him. The Greek word here is epituro, which is a forceful cast. There's only been one time that this word has been used in Scripture, and it was in Luke, and it was when the disciples were laying their blankets or their garments onto the colt for Jesus to ride. It was literally saying, I'm not taking this back. I'm putting it on this colt. I'm casting this onto the colt for Jesus' burden to be on this colt, not on me. So then he says, Peter uses this to say it's a forceful cast. It isn't like, let me just throw it out there and maybe reel it back. This isn't like fishing. It's I am throwing it out there, and it is staying out there, and I'm going to keep it out there. It's casting. So Peter's literally saying, give every burden, every anxiety, every weight you're carrying, you have to be dependent and cast it on him and throw it onto him in full trust. So the dependent heart trusts. But we live in a culture that says, handle it yourselves, because that shows weakness, right? If you're dependent on God, maybe you're weak. So just work it out yourself. Be the Lone Ranger. Figure it out. But Peter's saying that's the opposite. That's the opposite. You need to cast it on him, because dependency isn't passivity. It's forceful, active trust. This would be like if, it's like, y'all seen the movie We Were Soldiers? And when the crap hit the fan, right? And like everything is just going around and it's just explosions and bombs and they're just being completely invaded and all this kind of stuff and they're losing control. It would literally be if the radio operator was like, you know, I don't want to bother command with a broken arrow. I'm sure they got other problems to deal with. Like, I don't want to bother them with that. Like, you literally have the radio to call command and say, we need help. And you're like, nah, we'll figure it out. We can work this out. We can work it out on our own. We laugh at that, and you're like, that's crazy. You would never do that. Except, do we not do it in our daily lives? Like, do you not try to take ownership and take control back and, like, work this out on my own? When you Lone Ranger your own life, it's like bringing nail clippers to a gunfight. It's not even a knife. It's nail clippers. Like, we are in a fight, and you're just leaving it on the side. Because if y'all heard that phrase where when it says, oh, God will never give you more than you can handle, you've heard that, right? It's a total lie. Total lie. That's the point. The burdens get so heavy. Why? Because God's going, come to me, because I can do more in your dependency than you can do in your independency. Okay, remember that. God can do more in your dependency in him when the burdens get so heavy than you can when you're independent. Okay? So, a dependent man is in constant prayer. I'm talking about constant prayer. I'm talking about when you wake up, you're thinking about God. It's both written prayer, spoken prayer, and thought prayer. I think about God all the time. I go to bed, I wake up, you're always in conversation with him. That's total dependency. Then the dependent man is also in full surrender. He's saying, God, I give you total control of this situation. I didn't say you sit on your butt and do nothing. We have a job to plan, prepare, and respond. Show up, but God has the control. Don't take it back from him. Just be ready for whatever is coming. Be prepared, okay? But surrender it to him. And then the dependent man has faith, trusting that God will work this to his glory and your good. Not your glory and his good. His glory, your good. Okay? All right, so now, once we have dependency, we now recognize that we're in a war. You do, right? Because the burdens are getting so heavy. The fights are coming. You're just like, man, this life can get hard. So now a dependent man also recognizes it's time to be vigilant. That's our third point, the final one, vigilant. Verse 8 says, be sober-minded, be watchful. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion, seeking someone to devour. The vigilant heart stands guard. A vigilant man stands guard. He doesn't stand distracted. He's not spiritually asleep. The devil is not creative. He's consistent. He doesn't come up with new ways. He's just consistent. And here's the thing. He doesn't need to destroy our lives. He just has to wait to convince you that you have control and think that you can focus on yourself and you can seek your glory. We'll destroy our own lives. He doesn't have to do it. He's not creative. He's just going to convince you, oh, you got this. You got it. You're good. Don't worry about it. Just keep thinking about yourself. Keep seeking that glory that you know you want. That's when we find ourselves in some hot water. And Peter, again, understood this because it goes back to that garden moment, right? That's why he's writing it. He says, be sober-minded, be watchful. Why? Because, guys, I fell asleep. Peter did in the garden. Yeah, he wakes up. The guards have shown up. They're ready to take him prisoner. And what does Peter do? He jumps up. What? He pulls out a sword, lops off some ears. Well, really one ear that we know of. But who knows what else he went after. But the point is he wasn't prepared for what really needed to happen. He was responding in his own weakness. And ultimately, it could have literally destroyed Peter for who he actually went after. But thank God Jesus healed that ear and took away the evidence of Peter's crime. Because he wasn't really prepared. He fell asleep. He was not sober-minded. So he's warning us. So here's the deal. A vigilant man will do these three things. He will guard his heart. Guys, whatever you let in will lead you. Whatever you let in your heart will lead you. I'm going to call it like it is. Gentlemen, I know I may offend a few people in this room on either side of the table, but just deal with it. Here's the thing. If you only live with Fox News on your TV all day long, that is going to affect how you see the world. Just like if you only live with MSNBC, NBC, CNN, any of the other ones on that side, if you only live with that on your TV, it's going to affect how you see the world. Anything that you keep pumping into your brain will affect how you see the world. I'm not saying either side is wrong. I'm just saying whatever you put in your head, that's what's going to lead you. You keep that coming in. So maybe let something else lead your heart. That's what I'm challenging you to do. Okay? Whatever you let in will lead you. Now the other thing he'll do is he'll guard his home. He's going to guard his home. Guys, I'm going to be absolutely blunt with you. You are the spiritual leader of your home. That is your house. Whatever you let in your house is on you. What are you letting into your house that is affecting your family's spiritual health and maturity? Own it and change it, right? You guard your house. It's not your wife's job. It's not your kid's job. It is your job to guard your home, okay? Guard your home. And the last one, guard your brothers. The men at your table, the men that are around you. A vigilant man will check in, not check out. He stays accountable to the men in his life to be strengthened and supported in those moments, all right? So now, as we close for the night, the man who kneels to the throne, who leans on the cross, and who stands in the breach. The reason why I say stand in the breach is I love this, going looking at Psalms, previous Psalms David was writing, and he's reflecting on how God's wrath was put at bay because Moses stood in the breach. Are you a man willing to stand in the breach? Okay, so kneel to the throne, lean on the cross, stand in the breach, be vigilant, and that is a man that's worth following, right? And that is a man that God will use. And you know why I say God will use you? Because guess what, guys? We are in a fight. And that's what we're going to close out next week. We're going to bring this all home by looking at verse 10 because there's a promise that's coming. I want to encourage you guys to bring somebody with you. It's going to be a great night next Tuesday. We're going to have great food. We got honey-baked ham. It's going to be a good night. It'll be a 15-minute message on this last verse to give us hope. But the reality is, the reason why we want to talk about this is because we know that the reason why we want to talk about these things is because we know that every man is going to face at some point, he's either in a fight right now, he's recovering from a fight, or he needs to be preparing for a fight. And there's three worlds that we live in, relationship, home, and sin, that we find ourselves in some form of fighting. So my challenge to y'all is, are you a man? Are you becoming a man worth following? And this is how we do it.